welcome. Why don't we go around and just kind of say your name and maybe how you got connected with New Song and how long you've been here.
My name is Hungi. I've been at New Song for 6 years. And I connected when I went to school at UC Irvine. I had a friend who came to New Song.
My name is DJ Chuang. We just relocated from Washington, D.C. to Orange County. And I've known New Song almost since when it started. It's been kind of our home church away from home. And now that we're here, we're getting to reconnect.
I'm Nancy. We've been at New Song for, I want to say like 6-7 years, but we've been living in and out of the country, so we're back again.
I'm Hanya Galitzin, husband Don.
And,
oh, I look at that. And we've been here since October, asked to do some training with Ed, Ian, and Claire. Never realized we were going to stay. Because in the midst of that, our pastor, where we had only been for 5 years, and at the vineyard before that for 15, he resigned. And we had no other meeting. Other than we have been traveling, we traveled into Asia about 5 times in the last 2 years doing some ministry. It's like,
what? It's everywhere.
No other leading. It's like, could this be God? So here we are. Blessed.
And my name is Don, and I'm from Disneyland Baptist. Okay. Disneyland Baptist, you don't know about that one?
No.
Oh, the triangles around.
My personal favorite is Bedside Baptist.
Oh, Bedside Baptist. Yeah. Well, now you have Disneyland Baptist.
Yeah, I don't get that one now.
Bedside. That's where a lot of people are at right now.
Oh. Okay. Oh, I get it.
Let me introduce myself. Daniel. Was born in Austin. And my parents moved to Hong Kong when I was 3. So I lived there for actually 15 years, went all through high school, went to a British school called King George V. And we're living there for 15 years. My Chinese is absolutely a disaster. But, well. And so I moved over to Texas, back to, came to Baylor. And that was quite a transition for me, going from Hong Kong to Waco. I think one of the most startling moments for me was within the first week, my roommates were all jazzed about a taco cabana that was opening up. And I was like, man, people getting excited about a fast food taco joint? Where the heck did I move to, you know? So that was kind of scary, you know, surreal moment for me. But and then so I graduated with a accounting degree, worked 6 years in accounting, and then God kind of, you know, it was impressing on my heart, you know, just, you know, is there more than, you know, do I just want another accounting job, or what is he doing? So we took a step of faith and just said, you know what, we're not sure, 100% sure, you know, where you're leading us, but, you know, we felt called to do something different. So we went to seminary, got some training, and God just kind of opened the doors for church for us. And when about 2 years ago, we kind of got connected with New Song. And so we, God had been, you know, through DJ, really just brought our lives together, brought our passage across. And we've been in conversations, talking with them, you know, dreaming and being challenged in our faith. And then, you know, God kind of opened the doors up to start a New Song in Dallas. So I started out about 2 years ago. So, you know, it's been interesting, though, because we, you know, we're here to think about what does Church Without Walls look like and what does it mean. And you know, if you asked me maybe a couple years ago when we first started this conversation with New Song, you know, my picture of faith and some things have been turned upside down. And some of it has been just New Song and what they embody and as God has been working in us to dream about what our faith should look like. And part of it is this Church Without Walls. And so I think, you know, maybe some of you are here and you're asking the question, you know, what the heck is it? I don't understand it. Maybe you're thinking, you know, how do I communicate it? You know, I mean, it's one thing to kind of visualize it and dream about it, but I don't know. I mean, there's some nuances to it that I'm not sure how to communicate it. But, you know, we've been on this journey. And so I just want to share with you about our journey and what that looks like. But I think for us in the Dallas context, you know, we joke around and say that Dallas is in the Bible Belt. And not only are we in the Bible Belt, but we're the buckle of the Bible Belt. And so when it comes to church, we have our perceptions, deep-rooted traditions of what we think church looks like. So just kind of for conversation starters, you know, if I was to ask the question, you know, to be a church, you must have. Maybe we can complete the sentence. What do you guys think? To be a church, you must have.
I'm seeing the heat to my mouth, pastor.
Pastor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Building.
Congregation.
Money.
Good. Anything else?
Name.
Denomination. Yeah. Well, that's good stuff. So we talk about
programs.
I
just thought I'd throw that out.
Yeah, programs. Programs, buildings, church, pastor. You know, those are a lot of things that we say, you know, to be a church, we must have. And so I think, you know, when you talk about what a church encompasses and what it really means to be a church and to be on this journey, and why is that important? You know, there's certain things that we have to say, not just leave it at the church level, but what does it mean for us? You know, how does it impact our life? Because you know what? It has changed my life. It has changed my perspective on things, and it's given clarity to some of the things I've been wrestling with in the past. So we talk about it, and we say, you know, I've got these four, I think for Dallas, and even for our own lives, there are paradigm shifts that need to take place. And I think that's what we're trying to drive at is, how can we change our posture? How can we change our thinking of what church is, what's really important? You know, our board of all our perceptions, and we just wipe it clean and start all over, what does that look like? And so I think we've got to start looking at what are those things that we feel like are important, and then ask our question, are they important? So I think rule number one, we'll start off with what you said. To be a church means to have a full-time professional pastor. And we have to ask, is that true? You see, I think most of us, you know, the identity of the church is so tied in to the pastor. You know, I don't know, you know, I mean, if we think about churches here, Saddleback, you think of Rick Warren. Mosaic in L.A., you think of Erwin McManus. You know, this, I don't know if you're familiar, Mars Hill in Seattle is Mark Driscoll. And so you automatically tie in a name to the church. But I think more so than that, if you ask our culture, our culture demands a full-time professional pastor. Because like you said, if you didn't have one, would you consider it a church? I mean, a lot of people on the outside really looking in and go, hey man, what kind of cult thing are you running and all that stuff? And you guys are crazy. Who's leading you anyways, you know? And you get that kind of perception. You know, and it's not only that, it's full-time professional pastor. So there's the expectation, what kind of qualifications does he have? You know, and I remember one time, you know, I've gone through some of the interview process, and you know what? I absolutely do not like the interview process with pastors. I mean, they just grill you, and they look at all the qualifications. What are your experiences? What we do in this situation? Let me look at your resume. It's insane, and I'm, you know, it's very tiring. But you get the perception of what are the expectations that they have for your qualifications to lead a church. And somehow, maybe we think of, you know, the expectations that they're the CEO, they're the man of God, that, you know, they got trained, right? So they know God better, and they know how to do church better. And, you know, to be honest, it's not always true. And maybe even sometimes we think of church, the more pastors you have, the more important that church is. So what is our metric of success with regards to that? It's like, well, for you to be a church, for you to be a good church, you got to have that visionary, that great communicator, that guy up there at the top, funny, engaging, you know, hey, come to my church because we've got a great pastor. That's kind of the rule, you know. So to be a church means to have a full-time professional pastor. And I think the second one that I would say is to be a church is to keep the Sabbath, at least American culture, which means Sunday. So the priority is to be a church. You got everything revolves around Sunday, and I think, you know, I was thinking about our culture in Texas, you know, and maybe it's more so in Texas. I don't know, but and then you even draw it to the Baylor culture. So Baylor, if you're not familiar with it, is a private school, is a Baptist school, and so you know, I was in a fraternity, it was a co-ed fraternity, and this one girl, she was kind of, I guess we talked about what we did over the weekend. And she was like, damn, man, I got so drunk on Saturday night. I almost didn't make it to church on Sunday. I'm just like scratching my head. I was like, are you serious? Did that just come out of her mouth? But that's the perception. I have to go to church on Sunday. More Baylor funny stories. You know, Baylor's just kind of counterculture anyways. It's a weird place. The opposite way. But I heard the story about this one girl. She missed church, right, on Sunday. And, you know, afterwards, everyone goes to the cafeteria to eat lunch. And she's like, man, what do I do, man? People don't know. So what does she do? She dresses up just to go down to lunch in the cafeteria to make people realize, hey, or have the perception that she went to church. Again, this is just weird Baylor culture stuff. But that speaks to our culture of saying, you have to go to church on Sunday. There's something sacred about Sunday. There's something sacred about the Sabbath. You know, if you only went on Wednesday night to your small group, something like that, is that enough? Would you feel like, oh, I missed something on Sunday. I feel like something's empty. You almost feel like you're compelled. I feel guilty not going. And part of it, though, is the leadership, too. Because if you ask New Song staff, any church staff, what occupies the most of their time? Everything, or the bulk of their time, would revolve around Sunday. You know, you hear some mission statements. There's a mission statement of one church, and they said, it's all about the weekend. That's their mission statement. You hear maybe a children's ministry statement. We want the Sunday children's program to be the best hour of the week. What is that? What does it scream? It screams Sunday. One of the pastors shared with me, he said, you know, this is my work week. I spend 20 hours preparing for the Sunday sermon. I spend 10 hours preparing for the Sunday evening service. And then 2 hours for Wednesday night. So that's 32 hours for just preparing, and then not even including the time that he spends speaking. It revolves. The church leadership focuses on Sunday. We've created that culture ourselves. So when we talk about metrics of success, right? So we're talking about what defines a church, and not only that, what defines a good church. So what happens on Sunday defines what a good church is. That's the metric of success. I think rule number three. So the first one is to be a church means to have a full-time pastor. To be a church means to keep the Sabbath. And rule number three, and that's kind of integrated with the Sabbath one, but to be a church, there must be a worship gathering. It's not just the time, but it's the expression of it. So we take the worship gathering, and you know what? It becomes the spiritual apex of our week. That's where you meet God. That's where, you know, it's the life generator of the church. That's where God reaches the lost. You know, it's the driver of the spirituality of the entire church. It's what empowers us for our week. There's a certain element of truth to it. But again, we're asking, is that it? Is there more? And so when I look at the metric of success, it's not just that what happens on Sunday, but what happens at the worship gathering defines what the church is and whether it's a good church. You know, that's our expectation. What happens at the gathering defines that church. And then the last one, I think you mentioned this, building. To be a church means to have a building. Location. You know, this is the central place where we do church. What we give to God, we give there. What we do for God, we do there. To serve God is to serve the church. You know, I think there's a lot of churches, maybe they've paid off their buildings, and the building is sometimes the only thing that keeps that church going. Because they feel like we gotta do church, man. We got the building. What else are we supposed to do? And so, in some sense, where we do is just as important as what we do to a lot of people. And I know for us, a lot of people have been, for Dallas, when are we getting a building? When are we getting a building? When are we getting a building? Or we hear people, they don't have a building, I'm not going. And that really defines what happened. They literally come out and say, we won't go because you don't have a building. And that becomes most important to them. Gives us a sense of identity, security. You know, like our culture defines a lot by external experiences. So we say, man, you know, good looking guy, he must be nice, you know, a lot of money, whatever, you know, because our perception is based on the external. So even a church, in some sense, it gets defined by the external. You got a new building, you're really proud of your church, right? You got an old building, you're like, ah, man, kind of embarrassed about it, unless it's really, really old, right? Then you're like, ooh, this is cool, man. We're traditional, you know, cathedral. And then you're like, ah, man, it's hot. You know, bigger is better, what Dave Gibbons was sharing. You know, what is our first impression of, you know, like a saddlebag or something like that? You know, the identity, the vibe, sometimes is defined by the building. I went on a tour recently in Dallas, and you know, it was like a conference for pastors, and we got to visit some of the churches, and it was really interesting because, you know, we talked a bit about what they did and stuff like that, but I was really, really surprised at the amount of time that was allocated towards the tour of the building. And of course, everyone was really proud of the junior high and high school ministry because that's where the hot rooms are. I mean, they've decked it out. They said, we went to Abercrombie and just kind of pulled their designs in and stuff like that. And that's what they were showing off. And then people's questions were like, how much did you pay for this building? What's the seating capacity? All that stuff. And I was like, is that really important? I mean, why is that important? I mean, because it doesn't fit your context wherever you're at. So the metrics of success. Sometimes we say, okay, well, are we doing church well? The building reflects the health and the success. So the bigger you are, you know, the better the church. You know, I remember one time I was meeting with some college students, and I overheard this conversation. He said he was talking to someone, and they said, yeah, you know, our church meets at home. And he's like, dude, why don't you go to a normal church? You know? I mean, the perception is it's not a church because it's not meeting in a building, or it's not a normal church. What defines normal? So I think when we come back, I know the questions are there, you know, when we're reimagining the church, what is a normal church? What is a healthy church? And really what's important, and really how does that impact us? Because I think it's not just seeing it as an organizational level, church without walls, what Dave is sharing, you know, I mean, I think it impacts us. And what I've realized is, he's not doing this just to say, hey, man, this is a new song thing, and we're going to be hip, we're progressive, innovative. But at the heart of it is that it impacts our journey with Christ. It impacts how we engage in our world. It impacts my own faith and how I see my role as a follower of Christ. And I think that's, at the heart of it, what is most important. So we get to the first one. We say, okay, well, you know what, Dallas, man, and even Irvine, and the church culture here, what are the paradigm shifts for us to understand? What are the mindset shifts that we need to take to help us understand a little bit better of what this means to be a church without walls? So we talk about the first one, the pastor. You know, well, to be the church, you got to have a pastor. And not only that, but the expectation is that they're doing everything. You need something more to do? Go hire another guy. You know, at the heart of what Dave and even just the movement in general has been zeroing on Ephesians 4. Let me just flip through there. And what does Ephesians 4 say? It's talking about the gifts. 4:11. It says, it was he who gave some to be apostles, some to be prophets, some to be evangelists, and some to be pastors and teachers, to prepare God's people for works of service, so that the body of Christ may be built up, until we all reach unity in the faith and in the knowledge of the Son of God, and become mature, attaining to the whole measure of the fullness of Christ. What is this passage talking about? What is the role of pastors? It's to come alongside and say, hey, I'm going to equip you and prepare you for good works, for works of service, that the body of Christ may be built up. Yeah, I don't know about you, but like my gut, and I'm wrestling with it. I sense like a lot of people just, you know, in our community, they're like, I don't feel like I can do it. I don't feel like I can share my faith. I don't feel like I can teach. I don't feel like I can lead a small group. I don't feel like I can do this. Why? Because the culture has been, you need someone trained, you need someone qualified. And what does that mean to do that? You feel like you can walk alongside someone. You have to go through all this stuff before you're ready. But what is Christ? What is God looking for? In 1 Chronicles 16:9, it says the eyes of the Lord are searching throughout the earth, looking for to strengthen the hearts of those who are fully committed to Him. What He's looking for is a commitment in the heart. What's going on in there? It's not your skill set. It's your commitment to Him. And so when I think about it, I look at it and I say, you know, with Don and his wife, they were praying for us back in January. And one of the things that one of the guys, when they were praying, they were like, man, Daniel, I'm praying that there will be an unleashing of gifts. And me, being very selfish, was thinking about, oh man, you know, God, I want you to... You know, I feel inadequate, so it's the gifts within me that you're going to unleash. And God kind of laughs, I know, and a couple months later, it's unfolding, and He says, you know what, this church without walls, this releasing of the priesthood, this pastor's coming alongside, the unleashing of gifts is about the community. What are your gifts? What are your gifts? I said, it's not about me. It's not about the pastors. And we say, you know what? I don't feel like I have much to offer. But maybe if you got the gift of service. Christ came to serve and not be served. If your gift is the gift of service, you can show us a picture and an image of who Christ is, because He came to serve. If your gift is the gift of mercy, and you just shower us with mercy, you give us a picture of the mercy of God, because we're created in His image, and there's beauty in that. There is an unleashing of gifts. It's not all about the pastor. And so we ask, instead of the metric of success for a church, sometimes we say it's defined by the pastor. How well known is the pastor, how funny he is, how engaging, how great a communicator is. What if we turn around and said, it's not about the metric of success, it's not defined by the pastor, it's defined by you. The face of the church, what if it wasn't the pastor, but it was you? You see, when you're inviting people into your church, you're not inviting them to a new song, per se. You're inviting them into a community of people, into a relationship with you, in a relationship with God. So I think there's a paradigm shift in terms of what the roles, expectations, pastors, and that part of it is, what is God doing with us? That we can be involved, everyone plays. I think the next paradigm shift, this idea of the Sunday gathering. And so much of our focus has been focused on that. And sometimes there's this thing what we call the sacred and secular divide, where we like to say certain things are sacred, certain things are holy. You know, there's a separation of our faith from the ordinary things of life. So, you know, when we talk about Sunday, this is where I do church. This is where I experience God. This is where I encounter God. And what I do for God, I do on Sunday. But what does the Acts 2 model say? It says they met every day. It was a life-on-life experience. Instead of just the Sunday thing, you know, we oftentimes compartmentalize our life. I heard this one story where this guy, and, you know, I don't know if it's true or not, but he says guys tend to compartmentalize their life. So he says he pictures it like, you know, this big warehouse, right? So for girls, you walk in, it's just one big room, and everything's just kind of flowing, and it's just whatever. Everything affects one another. For guys, it's kind of like you step into a room, and there's lots of little rooms. And I'm able to close the door and move on into the next room and not worry about that. So I don't know whether that's true or not, but sometimes we do that with our spiritual life. I take Sunday, close the door. Monday morning, it's work. I go home, family. Go back. And so I start closing the doors, and they don't integrate with one another. My question is, if you cannot integrate your faith with your work, or you're a student, you know, most people spend 40 hours at work, 50, 60, 70, 80 hours at work. If I cannot integrate my faith with work, my faith has become irrelevant. If I cannot integrate it with my home, college life, whatever, my faith is no longer real because it just becomes a Sunday thing. So God's been working in me, and you know, it's been a journey. Because then what I realized is I started sharing the stuff. Then I started looking at the things at home. I said, God, what is it that you want me to do? Because you're wanting me to take my faith and look at the ordinary things in my life. And you may just think, oh, you know what, they're ordinary things. But God is saying, you know what? It's part of my relationship with you. So there's one time I realized I owed some money on taxes. I messed up before, and, you know, I'm an accountant, but doesn't mean I'm good with taxes, right? So I screwed up my taxes. I owed, you know, it wasn't a small amount of money. But I just kind of stopped, right? I said, I need some information. I don't have it all. And I just kind of sat on it. And then when I got the information, I was like, I'm just lazy, right? I didn't want to do it. But in my heart, I was like, you know, I'm going to do it. I just was sitting on it. But then God kind of just said, you know what, Daniel, you're not taking care of business. I want you to take care of business. And I said, you know what, God? It became a moment where I realized, you know what, I submitted myself to God. I said, you know what, this is an act of obedience to Him. When I think about disciplines in my life, just maybe even just how you manage your resources, how you manage your time. I said, God, you know, you've given this to me, and I'm a steward of what you've given to me. It becomes an act of redeeming the everyday of your life. It means every day, how does my faith relate to what I do? You know, there was this, when I was in school, this is one of my classes in seminary. And our prof, he goes, all right, how many of you remember what the pastor said 2 weeks ago? You know, I was just like, man, just really thinking hard and not sure. And I was like, I remember. So I raised my hand, all proud, yeah. And, you know, maybe about 80% of the class raised their hands. Then he goes, how many of you have taken that application and applied it? This is seminary, right? This is the wave, the future of the church. 2 out of 60. We have a problem. You guys are the next generation leaders. And we're not able to integrate our faith, what we're learning. I'm not saying that they're not doing anything at all, but taking that and integrating it in our life. Sometimes we say, you know, the one thing I've been challenging our community, I said, look at the worship leader. He's leading worship. But if you have to have him to worship, you're in trouble. What songs of worship do you bring to the table? Because songs of worship, what did the psalm say? It says, sing a new song. Tell of his wonderful deeds. You are a worship leader. You are a worship leader. We all are. And what our worship, we may not be a song leader, but it's those God moments in our life. It's sharing about what God is doing. If I can't teach my kids at home what it means to be a follower of Christ, if I can't integrate with my work, my faith is irrelevant. So it's breaking that paradigm. Church without walls. It's not just about Sunday. As we say, to be a church, you've got to worship with them. No, it's more than that. It's much more than that. It's about redeeming the everyday. How's God moving in your life? Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. I think the third paradigm shift. We said that the Sunday morning, you know, it's not just Sunday, but it's what you do. It's this worship gathering. Now, that's church. That's the spiritual apex of your life. That's where you grow. That's where you encounter God. It's in that context of the Sunday gathering. But I think sometimes we need to reimagine what the role of that gathering is. What is its purpose? And sometimes it's become a crutch. See, I think I love the mission statements for a lot of children's ministries. It says, you partner with parents to develop whatever it is. So for them to know Christ, develop them into followers of Christ. It's a partnership with the parents. And this is one thing God convicted me of. So I started sharing Church Without Walls with our community. And I challenged our community. I said, you know what? Too often we rely on children's ministry on Sunday as the only spiritual formation. And we're not taking responsibility for what happens in the home. And I found myself doing that. But also my wife does a wonderful job. But I was just like, you know what? Leanne, she did such a great job. I don't have to worry about it. And God says, no. No. You're the head of household. You're responsible for your kids. You cannot wipe your hands clean of that. And I thought, you know, for a while we've been meeting in homes and stuff like that, and a lot of people have kind of really struggled with it. And they're like, man, we can't do children's ministry the way that we need to do it. Man, we're kind of restricted in some things. And at first I scratched my head, but man, why is this such an issue? Why is this so hard? And I said, because that's the only place where kids are getting fed. That's my gut feeling. And it's not just a part of the rhythm of their journey, but it was their journey for their faith. So Sunday gathering is not just one venue. It's just one venue. It's not the venue for our spiritual formation. So when we reimagine, what does it mean for the role of the church? And I think I can sum it up in one thing. It's understanding the concept of what does it mean to be the church? What does it mean to be a follower of Christ? And so I remember in college, one of my roommates, he had accepted Christ one weekend. And then he got baptized by the church the following weekend. And then nothing happened. And for the longest time, I held a grudge against that church. I said, man, they didn't offer first steps class, they didn't offer orientation, whatever. And he's kind of drifting a little bit in his journey with God. And I was mad at the church. Because I said, they did not take up their responsibility to give him a solid foundation. And then these last few months, I asked myself, think about this Church Without Walls thing. We think about what does it mean for us to be the church. Because what Dave was sharing, that we are the living temples now for Christ. It's no longer one building. It's that he dwells in us. So we are the church. And then I said, you know what? I have no one to blame but myself. Because I put the responsibility of his spiritual life on church programs and what that church was, what I, my expectation of that church. But if I view myself as a church, then those functions, those responsibilities fall on me. And I had no one to blame but myself because I had that relationship with him. I was the closest one to him. So one of my favorite phrases, I've modified just a little bit, but it's from Neil Cole, Organic Church. He says, we need to focus on something else. Lowering the bar of doing church. And raising the bar of being the church. And when he talks about being the church, he's talking about being a follower of Christ. Lowering the bar of doing church and raising the bar of being the church. And it's not just focusing on how can we do church better. Because that's sometimes is our gauge for spirituality in our journey. How can we do church better? How can we make Sunday better? But that's not it. It's how can we become more like Christ in our journey. So when we define the metric of success, what defines a good church? You know, a lot of times we say it's the worship gathering. What's the vibe? What does it feel? Man, is there energy there? But if that's the end goal, good teaching, whatever, you know, hey, Pastor Dave, great message. That's not the end goal. The end goal is, what do you embody? What do you embody? What's happening in your life? What's the life stories that you have? What defines it is the community. What does the church community embody? What are the things that they are passionate about? What are the things that break their hearts? Your commitment to Christ, your commitment to each other, your commitment to his cause. Oh, that's the mission of the church, Christ's community cause. How are you embodying those values? I think the last paradigm shift, the role of the building. I think the church needs to come to grips with, what's the biblical basis or the foundations of what it means to be a church? And I kind of landed just in one passage. You know, there's many that I could turn to, but in John 4, woman at the well. We'll start off in verse 20. It says, "Our fathers worshipped on this mountain. But you Jews claim that the place where we must worship is in Jerusalem." And Jesus declared, "Believe me, woman, a time is coming when you will worship the Father neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem. You Samaritans worship what you do not know. We worship what we do know, for salvation is from the Jews. Yet a time is coming and has now come when true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for they are the kind of worshipers the Father seeks." See, she asked the question, you Jews claim that we must worship in Jerusalem. And the question that Jesus says is not where. The time's coming for true worshipers that will worship in spirit and truth. It's not where, but who. The building's not wrong. It's not immoral. It's not the meaning that we're going to... I think a lot of people, they panic and they say, man, we can get rid of our building. We're not going to have anything. And we're never going to look for one. That's not the posture. But when it becomes our life source, when it becomes the most important thing, that's when it becomes a problem. See, I think we need to understand the biblical foundations, but I think we also need to understand what's going on in our culture. You see, our culture has gone from a Christian nation to a post-Christian nation. You say, what does that mean? I don't know what that means. What does it mean? You know, people just aren't interested in coming to church. There's a big difference. I can build something. And if we were a Christian nation, hey, yeah, you know what? I'm interested in going to church. I'm going to go. But you go plant a church in India, you think people are going to come? You know, I've been working with some college students and just kind of checking out the scene and stuff like that. And I talked with the sponsor of all the religious organizations. I said, "What's going on? What's going on this campus?" He goes, "Well, there's like three organizations there, and each one has about 30 students that participate on a weekly basis." on a campus of 50,000. It's like, man, that's about 100 for 50,000. He goes, not much is happening. And I said, what do they do? He goes, well, you know, they do Bible studies and stuff like that. But you know what? And he said this. This is what his words were. But the students are not interested in Bible study. And we have this idea, this is a phrase that people are tossing around in church a lot. Build it and they will come, right? And this is what I challenged our community. I said, would you go to a Muslim temple if they had the best children's ministry, best worship, the best teaching? Not interesting. Why would you think someone would come to church if they're not a Christian? You see, and I think that's where we got hung up with on our building. You see, the Acts 1:8 model is a go, not a come. It's meeting people where they are at. I look at it and I just say, what is your mission field? I just finished a workshop about the workplace, missional living in the workplace. I said, man, that's where you spend most of your time. Too often we take people out of their context and say, that's where they have the greatest connection, and say, no, come here and serve in the church. And we pull them out. And we say, you know what? No, it's better to serve here. But maybe the measure of success, we've been talking metrics of success, and we say, build it, or the building, the bigger, the better. And maybe the metric of success is not what happens inside. Maybe the measure should be measured outside. What's going on in your life? What's going on in your homes? What's going on at work? You know, Rick Warren, in his book, Purpose Driven Church, it's written 10 years ago. But he says he believes the success of the church is not going to be measured by its seating capacity. How many seats are in the church? But by its sending capacity. I love that statement. So that's true. How many people are from here? That's okay, you know, I mean, what we do here, we're equipping you, right? Ephesians 4, getting people ready. But can I send you? And now everyone takes it as sending overseas. That's not it. Send you where you're at. And you feel like you can take your faith and make it real and authentic. That I can be the best spiritual father to my kids. And say, you know what? I know that I'm investing in the next generation. That's my goal. I can take it to my friends. And they can see the light of the love of Christ within me. So what does this shift look like? You know, the whole summary is kind of, instead of going to church, it's being the church. You know, it's kind of summarizing, what does this idea of church without walls look like? See, I think we got walls of time. We got walls of the lay versus professional. We got walls of the building. We got the walls of the context of it look like. You know, is church just four songs, message, a couple songs at the end? But it's breaking down all those walls and saying, what does it mean to be the church? What does it mean to be a follower of Christ? You know, the world may not be impressed with our buildings. There's a lot of more beautiful temples all across the world. But there is one thing that they can't reproduce, and that's the life of Christ within us. So there's no real boundaries to what church is. It's being the church in the everyday. It's being the church in your home. leaving the church and work and fleshing out what that looks like. That's why I've zeroed in on the metrics of success, because I believe that it's measured outside the walls. So what is it that we can do? You know, I think one of it is discovering your mission field. Let me share one more thing I shared from the other group. I said, you know, a lot of times we view that, you know, pastors, man, they got a higher calling, mine's not as good a calling, maybe they love God more, maybe whatever, I'm here to support the pastors. No. Can you view where you're at? If that is God's calling for your life, and not only is it your calling, but it is a high and holy calling. As a pastor, I cannot go where you are at. I don't have a presence there. They can't go where you're at. You are the mission field. You are the priest towards your network of friends. In some sense, you know, that's been a tension for me. Because as I was in accounting, I made the transition to pastor. I feel like how people view me is so different. They used to respect me. So Daniel's a good guy, man. But then one time, I was at our party, joked around, hey, Pastor Daniel's coming. Turned around and walked away. And as much as I want to engage the culture, I've got this tension, and I'm like, God, maybe it's not my role. I know there's going to be some natural relationships, but my primary role may be to support you guys. That's what Dave's talking about. He says the pastors are the support team. You guys are the field. You guys are the face of the church. You guys are the front line. That's what it means to be church. Because you guys are being the church in the world. The light, salt. And it's not just non-Christians. You could be having a fellow brother or sister. And the beauty of New Song is there's an amazing community field. But there may be someone there who says, you know, I walk into church every Sunday, I don't know anyone. Walk right back out. I go to Wednesday night Bible study, listen to some guy teach, I walk right back, I don't know anyone. And they're dying for someone to just listen to what's going on in their life. And you can be the church to them. Because you can be a voice. You can be an ear, listening to what's going on in their life. And be a voice of grace, a voice of hope, a voice of encouragement. Talk about redeeming the everyday. How do I see Christ in my everyday life? How do I embrace the role of a church, as a parent, as a missionary where you're at, as a father? That's kind of just some of my thoughts. And it's turned things upside down for me a little. I've really wrestled with, my focus was a lot more come to the church. I think God's been, I feel like I'm like Jacob wrestling with God in the daily aspects of my life. Because he's asking me to a radical commitment to him every day, every moment. And it's been hard. It's breaking down the walls of time, location, the context, and the role of the lay and the professional. I'd like to hear your thoughts.
I had a question.
Yes.
A lot of the points that you touched off on, we could do this at a small group, right? The thing is, for teachings, we could look into, what are they called, commentaries? Mm-hmm. We could study them on our own, but how would a church without walls? I'm thinking of a home church, by the way.
Yes.
So I mean, how would you go about teaching? How would you go about making sure that you know the integrity of the gospel is kept? You know? Mm-hmm. Because you have separate groups and people start doing crazy things.
Yeah.
Right. So how do you maintain that?
That's a really good question. And I think, you know, there's a part of it that you have to trust. And you have to trust God. How big is your God? Because if God is truly in control and his hand of grace is upon the movement, his truth will arise. You know what? When I was in college, I mean, it's not saying, you know what? As a pastor, it's weird, man. I mean, there's stuff that comes out of my mouth. I do my best to share what I think is God's truth.
Yeah.
And in college, man, I was teaching these things. I was all over the place. I'm like, I look back and I'm just like, dude, God, what did I just say? But I think there's a measure of God's grace that covers. And there's a part of it that you have to trust God and say, you know what, God, I'm doing my best. And there's a passage in 1 Corinthians, and I read this almost every week. You know, 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 4, and you really, it's the whole two chapters, but it says, my message and my preaching were not with wise and persuasive words, but with a demonstration of the Spirit's power, so that your faith might not rest on man's wisdom, but on God's power. Ultimately, it comes from the Spirit and his leading. And if your posture is right, and you say, you know what, God, let me speak the right words. Even if I kind of screw up, even if I protect the other people, you know? And it's not saying that, you know, even, I mean, sometimes I'm just like, I don't understand some deep truths. The beauty of the Bible is, it's simple enough for everyone to read, but it's rich enough for the deepest of theologians to interact with. If we were to say that we could truly comprehend his word, and God would be kidding ourselves. And there's a joke around DTS, right? The seminary I went to. They said, they have a degree called Masters of Theology. They said, when they hand that certificate to you at graduation, if you think you've mastered theology because you got the Masters of Theology, you're kidding yourself.
That's true.
So there will always be this element of tension. Man, God, but you have to trust God's grace. You have to say, how big is my God that he will protect his truth, and his truth will be revealed. And now you can do your best. You know, go to your pastor and say, what commentaries are good?
Yeah.
What resources can help me?
Have somebody that you can call. Mm-hmm. And you know what? They'll come to you. If something's a little off or wrong, they'll challenge you. And mm-hmm. then you go home and just say, I'll do some more studying on that.
Yeah.
We'll discuss it a little more next week.
Yes.
Yeah. Can I make a comment on that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just got through with a small group that I had it over. And what I did is, I knew that. See, I'm not the teacher. I'm not a teacher. But I know enough to get the thing going. And what I did is I went around the guys. And this is a small church. You could do this. I went around and told everybody they took a time to do a one-point sermon. Not a three-point, but a one-point. Then I found out the one that who liked doing it and who was good. Then I said, after we were all done, I said, you're going to be the one teaching, you know, whatever that person, because everybody has a gift, a spiritual gift. And if you're trying to get a server that has a serving heart to be a teacher, he's not going to do that well. If you're going to get a guy who's an administrator to teach, it's not good. You have to find the teacher who has a gift of teaching. And when you find that guy, he'll just love to do it, and then you just, in your small home church, doesn't mean that the teacher has to be the pastor. He could be a teacher. I was in a church, an evangelical free church, that the pastor was over here, but they have some of the greatest teachers in the congregation, so they haven't found a preacher yet, because they have found the pastor left, but they were searching.
And they're searching, but they're not in a hurry to search because
years.
They have such fabulous
teachers
that they're just taking turns. They got an elder board they go.
Yeah, yeah.
But what I'm suggesting that if you have a small group, just let everybody kind of do a one-point sermon and prepare for the next week, and then you'll find the one who is really good, and then let him run with it.
No, when you say one-point sermon, you mean a short sermon?
Just a one thought, you know, like, you know, Jesus wept. One of the shortest verse in the Bible. But I'm just saying something, just have them pick it out. Say, get a one-point sermon. It's just a thought to help you find the guy who has the gift, who will dig in and really do a good job. Because I'm sure an administrator or a server probably wouldn't do a good job as a teacher. And he's biting at the bit to say, hey, I could do it better.
I'm real excited as I'm hearing you, because we weren't at church Sunday, and we're always at church, but we went on vacation, went to Catalina. And I was so blessed, because I sat at a table with this couple, and we were talking with them in line and everything for an hour and a half. And I'm not an evangelist. I'm kind of shy in that area. I don't call that my gift. Hour and a half, I was talking about spiritual things to an atheist who just found out on Thursday that his second brain tumor is growing again.
Wow.
And just talked with him my experience with the Lord. You know, I didn't have my Bible with me. Just talked. I said, I don't do this. You know, and goosebumps were happening, the whole thing. And this man was just so hardened. And he said, yeah, I have twin sisters praying for me, and this and that. I says, well, have you thought maybe that's why I'm sitting here doing this? I don't do this. I don't like just talking to strangers like this. But it was so fun. It was just so, God, I was doing church on Sunday morning on the boat on the way to Catalina for an hour and a half. And, you know, I said, you will need something more than what you have up here. And I mean your intellect to get you through what's coming. I mean, you know, I said, this isn't heaven. You know, God can heal. But, you know, we don't know what God will do. You will need more. And I just went on and on. He was just riveted. And I said, will you pray? And his wife's out there. Yeah. She's the Christian. She cornered me later and says, oh, I took my phone number, the whole thing. She said, this was for me. And I said, would you pray? It is so simple. And you just need to get beyond your embarrassment, get beyond your pride. He says, well, you know, I'm thinking, but, every time I heard the but, I just, And I said, okay. Would you let me pray for what's going on in tumors? He said, big smile on his face, yes. So I called on God.
Right.
And just in Jesus' name, I said, we'll pray with our eyes open. I do this in countries where you're not supposed to pray. And I said, we'll just pray like we're talking so I don't embarrass you or anything, and I'll move my hands and everything. So we did that. And he had a big smile on his face the whole time. And I prayed, and I said, I pray for Jesus to come and touch your tumors right now. That God, he would be the laser. He would shrink them. And, oh, and on and on and on. He loved it. He loved it. I saw God moving. And I just prayed to him. He says, what if it's healed? Never
know.
I said, that's what the signs and wonders are for people like him.
Signs and wonders are for those people.
And his wife said, oh, he needs to talk to somebody more than who he talks to, the psychologist. And all. I says, well, I'm going to call my husband. John hangs out. He says, maybe you need a guy. He goes, yeah, maybe I do. I says, my husband would love to talk with you. So I've got their number. They own a big home in Puerto Vallarta, 10 bedrooms with a cook.
There you go.
And that's where our next conference is going to be.
And after that, we went to breakfast when we got there. Oh, am I taking over? I'm sorry. I'm just doing church without walls.
Absolutely.
No, it was so exciting. So we went to breakfast, and it's such a line after the boat, you know, and we weren't ready for our house yet. So we sat down at the counter. We love eating at the counter sometimes. And we did, and I noticed some people next to me with matching Hawaiian shirts, but I wasn't paying attention. One was really big. And anyway, I thought, some big guy and gal. We ended up being big girl and big girl with matching wedding rings on their honeymoon. And I kind of realized that, and I thought, oh, I'm not with this thing. I'm not spoiling their weekend. I didn't know what to do about it. I thought, oh, I'm eating my breakfast. And the compassion of the Lord hit me. The pity for them of their naivete of what they didn't understand of what they had done hit me. And I said to Don, can we treat them for breakfast? Because I heard they hardly had any money. And I said, where are you guys having dinner tomorrow night, tonight? Well, I don't know. Do you know of any place that's not too expensive? And I mentioned some place. Well, we're really short. I told Don later, I said, I waited. Do I encourage this? Will this be encouraging it? Oh, I really struggled. I thought, well, the Lord ate with the publicans. I thought, you know, this isn't my problem. Mm-hmm. What happens to them? My thing is to love.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, you know, I really don't feel like witnessing. I really didn't want to witness. And I said to Don, he says, it's your call, whatever you say. I thought, you know, let's treat him. I'm going to choose love. I'm going to choose love. In the first prayer, I said, please, Lord, let me not judge. I'm going to choose love. So I said, treat him. So we called the waitress over, and he says, put your finger on our bill. They having an evening breakfast. And so he quickly left, and it was time for us to leave. And we didn't tell him. We just said, we're just going. And so we left. Next morning, we ate there again. The food was really good. And we saw the waitress. We said, hey. What happened? And she says, oh, they were just a Twitter, you know, they were just, yeah, I go, yeah, I know. I wasn't about to spoil there. And she said, oh, that's why he left so fast. We just need to find them. We're going to look for them today. They were blessed.
But the point that Tanya was going to say is that as soon as she made that decision to treat them,
I forgot about the point.
They
were witnessing to me.
They started how good of Christians they were. And that's
they both are born again. At 14, 15 years old. They brought up God things.
So we could have
stood there and they began to, and they were glowing. They were really, you guys, glowing with the Lord.
That's hard for me.
I just watched all this and I thought, I'm just not going here. I'm just not going here.
But I said, you know, there's a pastor in Houston that would really be glad to take you in the home church. He didn't catch that.
No. Anyway, I'll tell you, I was amazed later at the ministry opportunities that isn't normal for me to come that way. But it was not being in church that Sunday and having a ball. God, but God opened. Doggone did that. Isn't that fun?
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So you never know.
No.
It's very, very the Lord. So.
Well, should wrap up here. Any more questions? No.
How big is your church now?
In our core, we have about 70, about 40 adults, 30 kids. It's about we get about 50. Well, actually, a few weeks ago, we had 60, but in Texas, everything's larger. So.
Questions like, how about Sunday school? How about this?
Yeah, you know, but I think we're okay. At first, it was a struggle because we weren't sure how to best approach it. But I think a lot of people have understood better. You know, we're not just pulling things out of thin air to try and do and be all wishy-washy with our experimentation. But there's a lot of intentionality with what we're doing. And I think that's where, you know, where we've gotten better with our communication, I think.
So you do need to have some, you know, like you were talking about, you do need to have somebody who's knowledgeable to teach, you know. You do need to have somebody who likes to, let's say, teach the kids and
that setting. But I think the idea is, you know, if ever we become too dependent
on
Sunday, then we've negated our own responsibilities for our own spiritual journey. We've negated our responsibility to our kids.
Yeah.
And even evangelism, hey, I'm just going to bring my friend. Right. And really, the context, I remember one time I shared with someone, I said, when you got a, you know, one of those, sometimes they call them explorer classes, you know, hey, introduction to who God is and stuff like that. If I've got a Muslim, a Buddhist, someone who's jaded by the church, someone who's seeking, what the heck do I say?
Yeah.
And I don't know them.
It's individualized.
Yeah.
It needs to be very, very carefully, just like me speaking to the atheist.
Yes.
I was just basically sharing who God is with me, what he can do this for you too.
Mm-hmm.
And not throwing the Bible at
you. And most of the times, you have the trust of your friends. They come to someone else, they're like, who are you? You know?
And your job is to equip the saints.
Absolutely.
You know, and you know, this has been going on for every generation works through the same thing. I've seen this before. There's a church called 24/7 that's no longer around. And he did it for about 20 years. And that's what he did. He was 24/7, church 24/7. So he told everybody to equipping them so much that he worked himself out of a job. So he went to another church and up the state.
That's
something.
Great.
After 15 years, you can only, you know, a church only stays about 10 years. And everybody sort of matures and moves on. Either the pastor moves in 10 years or the congregation will move.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So the job is to equip. And when you equip, if you did a good job, the pastor may have another shot at doing it again with another generation, or he'll work himself out of a job. And God will give him a bigger platform to work off of. See? So I always am very, I'm very happy to equip the saints because it gives you a bigger platform to work from or to watch them grow and see them.
We accidentally started a church without walls as we were living up in Korea, Seoul, Korea, as expats, because my husband's business took us there for a couple of years. And it was really tough because the church English worships there just weren't meeting our needs. So it was actually English church pastor of that big Korean church that approached my husband and another, you know, said, why don't you guys go up and start your own couples group? Because they didn't meet our need. So huge, only big Korean church. Huge Korean English worship, hundreds, but they just weren't meeting our needs. Here's most of us with, you know, expats that are from the executive level. It just wasn't meeting their need.
Yeah.
So here comes Dave Gibbons, who takes some of our guys to Thailand mission trip, and they just can't change. And kind of, you know, Dave could do that to people. Kind of sparked up and said, what is our purpose other than living in Korea, making a ton of money? Because these guys are all sent from, you know, kind of these, like Lehman Brothers. And so our top executives not meeting, you know, their spiritual life is dying because the lifestyle there is kind of tough for the couple. So here I go, brand new. I don't know anything about Korea. I'm Korean by ethnic background, but I don't know anything. And we realize the need is there. You know, couples are just, marriages are falling apart. So my husband and this other, they were leaders of under the English worship. They start this couples group kind of underground from their church.
Yeah.
And then it's just amazed how started with five couples and grew to in our apartment 40 couples, and so it's just an apartment's tiny in Korea, and so it was really tough. Though same thing we ran into, because my husband and I and this other couple were not teachers, we're not whatever, but it was just love.
It was community.
They were so thirsty there because everyone's lonely. Everyone came for fellowship, and therefore it turned into Bible study, whatever, but we never got through a book because everybody would start sharing about something and how tough their marriage was or whatever. And so it was just a small group without any teaching the Bible, but it was just love. And through it, you know, they were growing, but I had to move back for different reasons with my children. So we're just there now. And when Dave said, hey, we're going to finally take off with this New South Korea, you know, it's an exciting part right now, but we're in the beginning stages of what to do with this home church that I never experienced before. So it's very exciting, but it's tough because we're dealing with these people that are, you know, just highly intellectual and successful, and they're saying, hey, I love coming to your couples group, but where's Sunday school? Where's, you know, I still want to go to, I want to go to church Sunday.
Yeah.
I want to, where's the building? So
we
grew up so traditional for the most part, but it's really amazing. People from all over the world, you know, we're ministering opportunities just, it's amazing, the expat life there in Korea. I never knew that. So I'm here moving back because of my children, and I'm just so torn because I know God's using me. I can't teach the Bible, but I can love people.
Bible study fellowship, community Bible study.
Right.
You can work through those.
Yeah. So we're just praying
because
for
those are very basic and very solid and.
That's right. So I did hook people up to BSF. There is a BSF in Seoul.
Yeah, I used to be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's all kinds of stuff going on, but they're still kind of, right now, you know, they're kind of going back to the churches now because they're feeling kind of lost. You know, saying, Dave, send us a pastor. They're still thinking, send us somebody. Yeah. Not realizing we need to equip every one of us. But it's true, though. We have leaders. People just kind of surface. Oh, you like to cook? Okay, then you're in charge of the meals. Yeah. We always ate together. You're in charge of the meals.
You like children?
You like children?
Exactly.
Oh, yes, I love my grandchildren.
But you know, it's a challenge.
Children's program.
But they will show up if you're in your home, in your home group. God gives gifts to everybody, and they will show up. If you
give them
give them the opportunity and you take yourself out of it, you can just organize it.
But it's exciting, and it's really, you just want to just hit them over the head and go, you don't need to go to church only on Sundays. You don't need this church building. Look at the way you're growing. Your spiritual life has been dead. You told us so, and then you're growing. Your marriage is growing, yet they're still thinking, well, I'm more comfortable in church. When are you going to have a building? So it's just been exciting to hear, you know, when I hear stories about what other people are doing. I don't know what my part is, because I'm here now because of my children. My husband's still there, and that group is still meeting, and my heart is there. So I'm trying to find somebody so I can be there again. A lot of struggles, though. People can't trust themselves that they could also be on some type of leadership.
Absolutely. Well, let's close in prayer. And then we can, I don't know what's next, but we'll get there. Father, I just thank you for this time. I just ask, Lord, for your grace upon us as we continue to seek what does it mean to be the church, what does it mean to be a follower of Christ. How do we integrate everything together and find balance in our life and really just see how our faith can integrate with our world? You know, we've created certain walls. We've created certain traditions and barriers that sometimes can hinder us in our journey with you. So I pray, Lord, that you'd help us to just wrestle with it. It's not a right or wrong answer, but ultimately it comes down to our own journey with you and how we come reflect you and your passions and glory. Father, again, I just thank you for this group today, and I pray, Lord, that it would just be a conversation starter, a catalyst to future conversations and to really just seeing how we can be a light into our world. We pray all this in your Son's name. Thank you.